I was born in you, under the scent of pestering exhaust fumes, and even then I knew life was too much and too little at once. My mother held me as though I were glass. My father drank himself into silence. In that silence, I discovered the music of knives. The blade hums when it finds its target, the way Sartre hums when he insists we are condemned to be free. I, too, am condemned by a profession that is nothing more than a mirror of my appetites, my distaste. I kill, yes, but I kill as others compose a symphony or uncork a bottle of Châteauneuf du Pape. My work has terroir. Each city offers a different bouquet. Vienna, with its tobacco-stained café and orchestral precision. Marrakech, where the air tastes of cumin and dust. Oslo, where the snow muffles the last gasps of those who cling to life as though it were a child. In Paris, always Paris, where I return not to be forgiven but to remember. The Seine flows indifferent as Camus' son. Do not mistake me for a brute. My suits are tailored in Milan, my gloves kid leather, my shoes handmade in Florence. The clink of a baccarat glass is to me what the sound of a lock disengaging is to you, a small reassurance that the world is ordered, even if falsely. When I slide a pearl earring into place before an assignment, I am fastening the absurd itself onto my flesh. You will ask, though you cannot ask because I am speaking into silence, whether I feel remorse. But remorse is only nostalgia in another dress. I do not regret the lives I extinguish. I regret that existence itself offers so few moments of authenticity. When I press the muzzle of a silenced pistol against the nape of a man who has betrayed his own ideals, I am giving him one moment of truth. In that instant, he knows the sum of his being. He is pure facticity. And then, nothing. I prefer poisons, though. A gunshot is crude, a staccato note in a symphony otherwise composed for strings. Arsenic dissolves into wine, becomes indistinguishable from the laughter that follows the third course. Cyanide, when placed under the tongue of an unsuspecting diplomat, is as abrupt as Kierkegaard's leap. And digitalis, is the poetry of the cardiac muscle's surrender. Each poison speaks its own language. I am only the interpreter. There was once a man in Prague, a banker with eyes like broken marbles, who invited me to his table without knowing I had come to end him. He ordered foie gras, a sauterne to match. I listened as he spoke of money, of power, of his small triumphs over smaller men. His words were so banal they nearly seduced me into pity. Yet as he raised his glass, the crystals caught the light, and I saw in them not his reflection but mine. I drank first, he followed. By dessert he was gone, his face slackened into a mask of childhood. I paid the bill and walked out into the fog. The fog did not notice me. The world continued. Do you see? This is the cruelty. Not that I kill, but that nothing changes when I do. The absurd is not in the act. The absurd is in the continuity of the streets, the market stalls, the couples kissing in doorways, as though eternity were theirs. I keep lovers, sometimes, women more often than men. They seem to understand the fragility of pleasure, how it dissolves even as it arrives. One, a cellist in Berlin, once traced the scar on my shoulder and said, "This is your soul escaping." She left before dawn, tarrying only her bow. I did not follow. Desire is not possession. It is the echo of our lack. In hotel rooms, I read philosophy. Simone de Beauvoir lies open beside my pistol. I find company in her insistence that freedom is not given, but made day after day, act after act. To kill is my act. To drink burgundy alone in a velvet chair is also my act. Both are free. Both are condemned. The trick is to drink slowly, to let the tannins coat the tongue, to pretend that the weight of the world is contained in a glass. The state employs me, or rather states. France, sometimes, Russia when it amuses me, private interests more often than not. But I am not loyal. Loyalty is a fiction designed to console cowards. I am loyal only to the texture of silk sheets, to the cut of a perfect diamond, to the silence after music ends. The rest is transaction. Once, in Lisbon, I was ordered to kill a poet. He was old, his verses forgotten by the world. He wore a scarf too long for his body, and his apartment smelled of ink. I listened to him read, his voice tremulous, yet his words contained an intensity I had not tasted in years. I left him alive. I even kissed his cheek. For this, I was reprimanded, nearly discarded. But some lives are already closer to death than any bullet could bring. Still, the jobs accumulate, a ledger without end. I imagine sometimes that each name I erase is engraved upon my skin, invisible but tangible. I run my fingers along my arm and feel their ghosts. This is my rosary, not beads, but phantoms. They do not haunt me. They simply remind me that I am still here, breathing, choosing. You might think I am unhappy, but unhappiness is too simple a category. I am alive, and life is intolerable. Therefore, I am content. Content in the way a flame is content to consume, a wave to crash, the contentment of inevitability. One day I will stop. Perhaps I will be stopped. A knife between my ribs, a glass poured for me instead of by me. I do not fear this. Death is not the opposite of life, but its completion. Until then, I will continue. The next city, the next name, the next dinner, where the waiter unfolds the napkin across my lap, as though I were innocent. If there is a God, he is not watching. If there is meaning, it is written in disappearing ink. I accept this. I toast it. I swallow it. And tomorrow, somewhere, someone will open a door and find only absence where once there was breath. The assignment in Florence was meant to be routine. Rinaldi, an industrialist whose fortune was built on smoke and broken bodies, was hosting a luncheon on a terrace above Fiesole. I slipped into the uniform of a waiter carrying a tray heavy with glasses. One of them, his, had already been prepared, laced with aconite, colorless, tasteless, a death disguised as vintage wine. He was a florid man, booming with forced charm, yet when I set the glass before him, I faltered. In his mouth, I saw my mother's mouth, tight with disapproval, carved by years bent over a wash basin. I remembered her cracked hands, the light that burned her skin. She had always said life was endurance, not beauty. And here was this man, drinking as though eternity were his, mocking endurance with indulgence. He raised the glass. He drank. Soon the cough began, the hand to the chest, the bewildered look toward the waiter who was no waiter. I slipped into the gardens before the shouting started. Among the lavender, memory ambushed me again. The face of a former lover appeared, the Berlin cellist with cropped hair and fierce eyes. She had once touched the scar on my shoulder and whispered, "This is your soul escaping." At the time, I laughed. In Florence, as I heard panic rise from the terrace, I felt her words as prophecy. And then, unbidden, the sea returned. A day long ago on a Normandy beach when I was young, when the water stung cold against my legs and the sand seemed endless, when I lay on my back and laughed without reason. That laughter has echoed through my life like a taunt, reminding me of a self untouched by death. By the time I returned to the city, Rinaldi was already gone. Another entry in the ledger. In the hotel, I removed the uniform, poured a glass of Chianti and sat at the window overlooking the Duomo. But it was not Rinaldi I thought of. It was my mother's weary mouth, my lover's vanished music, and the salt sting of a day on the shore that refuses to release me. Lately, I feel myself dissolving into the universe, as if the body is merely a temporary scaffolding and the true edifice is elsewhere, spread across the fabric of space-time, stitched with invisible threads. I think of Einstein, how time dilates, how mass bends light. I imagine the bullets I have fired continuing endlessly through curved space, their trajectories bent, their echoes whispering among galaxies that will never know me. The physicists tell us the universe is expanding, that every second the galaxies flee farther from one another, exiled by their own inertia. I too expand. Each death I enact pushes me outward, further from whatever center I once thought I had. Perhaps this is what it means to live, not to be stable, not to remain, but to scatter, to disperse, to become unreadable even to oneself. Sometimes I look at the night sky after an assignment, and I am pierced by the thought that the starlight I admire began its journey before I was conceived, before my mother's silence or my father's drink. A photon from Andromeda leaves its star and wanders for millions of years only to strike my cornea at the precise instant I exhale smoke from a Gauloise. That photon and I are lovers, bound for 1 second, then gone. Is that not more intimate than any embrace? Relativity assures us there is no universal present, no shared now. While I press a trigger in Geneva, some distant star collapses into itself, becoming a black hole, swallowing its own history. To kill a man, then, is nothing compared to what the universe accomplishes in silence. His absence is a small ripple on a pond. The cosmos drowns entire suns without ceremony. I am both horrified and comforted. The new revelation tells us that space itself may tear, that dark matter holds us like a secret lover, invisible but inevitable. I wonder if my own darkness is such, unseen but exerting gravity, pulling everything into orbit. The men and women I end are satellites. They drift too close and then they vanish. Not by malice, by law, by physics. I think of time, how my life is a line to me, but a smear to the universe. Perhaps I have already died. Perhaps the assassin sipping wine tonight in Vienna is only one frame in a film already projected across eternity. If so, then responsibility is both absolute and irrelevant. I am guilty, yes, but of acts already complete, already burned into the fabric of existence. There is no undoing. There is only the acknowledgement, I was here. And yet, against all this cosmic cruelty, I continue to savour the smallness, the scent of truffle shaved over risotto, the way silk clings to skin in summer humidity, the faint vibration of Bach's cello suites echoing in a high-ceiling room. These are my quarks, my constants. They resist entropy, if only for a breath. When I lie in a dark hotel room, I feel the bed dissolve into the planet into its orbit, the orbit into the endless whirl of galaxies. My body, once so precise in its violence, is only stardust reorganized. The same carbon in my blood fueled ancient stars, the same iron in my veins will someday rust into soil. To kill, then, is not to end, but to rearrange. Energy cannot be destroyed. I am merely its accountant, its curator. And so the assassin becomes cosmic, not by choice, but by recognition. I am not apart from the absurd universe. I am its instrument, its quiet metronome ticking in rhythm with the collapse of stars. One day I will be absorbed, as all things are, into the silence that is not silence, but infinite radiation. Until then, I walk the streets, I drink, I kill, I look up, and I vanish already into the vastness that does not notice me, but that is me. This morning in Tangier, before the glass of wine, before the name in the envelope, I bent down on the beach and took a single grain of sand between my fingers. Ridiculous, is it not, that something so slight should demand more of my attention than a man's life? Yet I held it, studied it. A grain of sand, merely fractured quartz, silicon dioxide, the skeleton of mountain long dead. Once it was granite, magnificent, towering. Once it resisted the wind and bore the burden of forests. Then frost cracked it, rivers carried it, waves polished it. Now it is so small it could slip behind my eyelid unnoticed. Within it, molecules locked in tetrahedral lattices, oxygen embracing silicon, electrons spinning in their invisible orbits, a geometry so rigid it resists time itself. To shatter it further would take a furnace, a violence greater than mine. And yet, here it lies, anonymous, infinite in number, forming a shore that pretends to be whole. I roll it in my palm, feel its hardness, and I think, I too am lattice. My desires are molecular, my hatred, my pleasures, my need for silk sheets and dark chocolate, these are only arrangements of carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen. Perhaps even wrath is chemistry, adrenaline secreted, heart accelerated, neurons firing until one's hand cannot help but clench. Wrath is not moral, not metaphysical, it is molecular. A cascade of reactions, an inevitability when pressure is applied to flesh too long. And yet, wrath feels like something more, doesn't it? It feels ancient, biblical. The wrath of God, the wrath of nations, the wrath of a woman scorned. Wrath is fire applied to the self, as much as to the other. It consumes indiscriminately, sandblasting the conscience until only action remains. I have felt it. When an employer betrays me, when a lover lies, when a mark looks into my eyes with smug certainty that they will live another day, wrath has steadied my hand, even as philosophers whisper that anger is weakness. No, wrath is clarity. In wrath, the world becomes grain sharp and blurred by mercy. But wrath is also futile, for what does the grain of sand know of my fury? What does the molecular lattice care that I curse the universe? Nothing. It endures, as it has endured for millions of years, immune to the temperature of my blood. Wrath burns me, not it. Perhaps that is why we invent gods, to imagine a wrath beyond ours, cosmic enough to bend quartz, to collapse mountains, to stop the absurd from laughing at us. I put the grain back on the shore, among its countless king. Alone, it was nothing. With others, it is a desert, a beach, the raw matter of glass through which we gaze at stars. Wrath disperses too. In solitude, it can shatter, but in the company of millions, it becomes revolution, becomes war, becomes history, written in fire. Perhaps every act of mine is only a grain, but together with others, we are the dune that buries cities. Still, I prefer the quiet grain, small, precise, indifferent, like me. I rose from the sand, brushed the salt from my palms, and unlatched the steel clasp of my case. Inside, the instrument lay waiting, black, old, and different. I reloaded with the precision of a liturgy. Magazine seated, chamber check, the clean click like punctuation at the end of a thought. No tremor in my hand, the absurd is always steadier than the heart. From the pocket of my coat, I drew the phone. The glass lit my face in the colorless glow of a void, a single message. Coordinates, a time, a name, no explanation. There never is. The phone does not care if I have contemplated galaxies or sand, wrath or the depth of oceans. It delivers only the next line in the script, without comment. I slide the weapon back into its case, feel the weight settle against my body like a reminder that the universe can be reduced to a trigger pull. Outside, the tide continues its endless erasure. Above, stars throw down photons older than empires. On the screen of my phone, a name waits to be erased by my hand. I inhale, exhale, and walk toward the next absence. I should have gone straight to the hotel, polished the barrel, ironed the blows, but hunger is its own summons, and so I stepped into the fluorescent sanctuary of a McDonald's, that cathedral of the industrial palate, the smell of salt, fat, sugar, unashamed, immediate, wrapped me more tightly than any silk scarf. I ordered with precision, with relish, a feast of anonymity. The Big Mac arrived first, a tower of bread, meat, sauce, lettuce collapsing under its own ambition. I bit into it as one might into a contract. Layers of false promises, stacked illusions, sweetened by sauce to disguise their banality. It was my profession in a bun, cheap, repeated endlessly, but always consumed with a kind of desperate need. The fries came next, golden and fragile, each a fleeting blade. I took them one by one, salted fingers glistening, and thought of the bodies I have arranged across hotel beds, across sidewalks. Each fry unique in curvature, each the same in taste, disposable, quickly cold, and yet, while they are hot, irresistible. Wrath itself tastes like this, fleeting, salty, leaving the tongue thirsty for more. A McChicken, pale mayonnaise spilling at the edges, was innocence disguised. The soft bun, the whisper of lettuce, it pretends to be lighter, kinder, but it kills just as efficiently as any pistol. I ate it slowly, the way I have ended certain lives gently, almost tenderly, letting them imagine comfort until the last breath. The filet-o-fish, ridiculous, square, blend, was the ocean's ghost, bleached white like coral, a morsel of marine death tucked in cellophane. As I chewed, I tasted the extinction of reefs, the slow asphyxiation of the sea. To eat it was to participate in the mass execution already underway, global, unstoppable. My own violence seemed artisanal by comparison. And then the nuggets, 9. I dipped them in sauces, sweet and sour, barbecue, honey mustard. Each bite was a method, a variation. Like my poisons, each had its flavor, abrupt, smoky, cloying. The nuggets themselves had no identity. They were mere vehicles for the delivery of death by condiments. My profession in miniature. I washed it down with Coca-Cola, black as night, fizzing like the static of galaxies colliding. The sweetness burned my throat, carbonic acid sharp as betrayal. Every swallow was compulsion. The drink consumed me as much as I consumed it. This too is assassination. One is never separate from the act, one is dissolved by it. Last, the apple pie, molten, sugared, impossible to eat without injury. Its filling scalded my tongue and I welcomed the pain. It was the perfect metaphor, golden crust of civility, interior of molten wrath, an inevitability of harm disguised as comfort. I laughed, quietly, in the booth by the window, as I finished it. When I was done, the tray before me was strewn with wrappers, grease, empty cartons, detritus of ritual, evidence of appetite, of necessity, of absurdity. The staff would clear it away, indifferent as the sane, as indifferent as the universe. I wiped my lips with a paper napkin, checked my phone again. The name still waited, unbothered by my feast. And I rose, satiated yet emptied, as though my profession itself had been eaten and swallowed by my own mouth. They were already there when I sat down, the men at the table beside mine. Loud, swollen with beer and arrogance, though their cups were paper and their burgers dripping grease onto plastic trays. Their laughter was the laughter of jackals. Their words, casual cruelties about women, about immigrants, about the poor, were thrown into the air like scraps to each other, half chewed and foul. I tried to let the fries absorb me. I tried to imagine galaxies in the fizz of my Coca-Cola. But their noise pressed against me, a blunt weapon, louder than the hiss of the fryer, louder than the tired music filtering through the speakers. I am accustomed to silence, to the neat click of mechanisms, to the discreet collapse of a body. Their presence was disorder. Their presence was vulgarity. So I acted, not with spectacle, never that. Subtlety is my sacrament. When one of them rose to fetch more ketchup, I brushed past him as if distracted, a stranger in a crowd. My hand found the soft flesh beneath his ribcage, pressed a needle through denim into skin, a prick quicker than his laugh. He did not notice. None of them did. They were too busy choking on their own voices. He returned to the table, resumed his billowing. 5 minutes later, his face drained of color. He wiped sweat from his brow, muttered something about the heat. They laughed at him, louder, oblivious. His words grew slurred. His hands trembled as he reached for a nugget he could no longer hold. They thought it was the beer or his weak stomach, and mocked him until he slumped forward, cheek pressed into a smear of ketchup. The others fell silent, for the first time all evening. They poked him, cursed him, shouted his name, tried to shake him awake, but their noise had already lost its edge. It was a noise of confusion, of fear. They carried him out into the parking lot, fumbling with their phones, shouting for an ambulance that would arrive too late. I remained at my table. I ate the last fry. I sipped the last of my drink. My tray was empty except for wrappers, grease, a napkin folded precisely into quarters. Their absence was louder than their presence had been. And at last the restaurant was calm again. Violence is not always grand. Sometimes it is only a whisper, a needle, a silence restored in the house of the absurd.
I could have left it at one. A single interruption silenced, a needle's whisper sufficient to restore order. But wrath, once summoned, is not so easily dismissed. It lingers, a vibration in the nerves, a command written in adrenaline. When they carried him into the parking lot, stumbling, cursing, flailing for their phones, I followed. The air outside smelled of gasoline and salt. Sodium lamps threw their orange halos across the asphalt. Their voices carried, panicked now, but still coarse, still fouled with the same ugliness that had filled the restaurant. Even in crisis, they could not help themselves. Insults to each other, to the stricken man, to the world. They were incapable of silence. And I, my profession, thrives on silence, so I gave it to them. The pistol, retrieved from the case in the trunk of my car, was already loaded. I moved as though merely crossing the lot, a shadow among shadows. The first shot entered the chest of the one crouched over his friend. He made no sound beyond a cough, then folded like paper. The second spun in confusion, phone raised as if its glow might ward me off. A single round to the temple extinguished both him and his screen. The others tried to scatter, but panic makes men clumsy. One slipped on the oil-stained concrete. Another ran headlong into the low barrier by the dumpsters. I dispatched them efficiently, each shot a punctuation mark. No waste, no flourish. The night absorbed the noise as though it had been rehearsed.
When it was finished, the lot was still. Their laughter had been buried under the hum of the street light. The one who had fallen first remained slumped in his companion's arms as if they had tried to hold him up in the last instant. Together, they resembled a grotesque tableau, loyalty in death, a solidarity they had never managed in life. I stood there a moment, breathing evenly, and considered the absurdity of it all. A fast food cathedral, a feast consumed, an irritation indulged until it became massacre. No contract, no name, no payment, only wrath transmuted into action. And yet, as I wiped the weapon and returned it to its case, I felt not triumph, nor regret, but inevitability. As if the night itself had demanded that erasure, and I had been the instrument. I drove away, leaving the silence behind me. The wrappers on my tray inside the restaurant were more evidence of my presence than the bodies cooling in the lot. At night, when the body betrays me to unconsciousness, the images return, distorted. Not the faces, I rarely remember faces, but fragments, teeth scattered like rice across a marble floor, a river thick with ketchup red current, the sound of laughter looping endlessly until it turns into screaming. Sometimes I dream I am eating again, my mouth full, but the food reshapes itself into bone, into gristle, into sand that grinds down my teeth. I wake with the taste of iron on my tongue and the sheets twisted around my legs like restraints. The nightmares are not guilt, they are residue, chemical runoff from the acts I perform. My conscious mind is precise, curated. My sleeping mind is a midden, where all the detritus of death gathers, swarming, unresolved. And yet, even in these dreams, I never stop. I never put down the weapon. There was a season, brief, fragile, when I believed I had been touched by grace. After one assignment in France, I entered a chapel to escape the heat. Inside, the air was cool, heavy with incense, shadows broken by candle flame. A choir rehearsed somewhere unseen, voices weaving in Latin, syllables I did not understand, yet felt dissolve into my marrow. I knelt without thinking, the marble bruising my knees, and for the first time in years, I wept. I thought, perhaps there is a God. Perhaps every death I delivered was not absurdity but preparation, some hidden liturgy written in blood. I carried a rosary in my pocket, I whispered prayers into the silence of hotel rooms. For weeks, I believed I could trade the precision of my pistol for the precision of faith, that I might erase my ledger with confession, start again, be reborn. But faith, too, is a contract, and I have always been a poor negotiator. The God I sought gave no reply. I prayed over names I had been ordered to kill, asking for forgiveness before and after, yet the names kept coming and I kept obeying. The choir's voices faded into memory, the incense turned to smoke from my barrel. The rosary broke in my hand one night in Madrid, beads scattering across the tiles like spent casings. I understood then my conversion had been hunger, not revelation. Hunger for silence, for order, for something larger than myself to contain the chaos. But the universe is indifferent, and God, if he exists, is silent. So I returned to silk gloves, to poisons, to the quiet mathematics of dispatch. Yet something of that season remains. I am still sensitive, perhaps more so. I hear echoes of hymns when I oil the slide of a pistol. I see candlelight flicker in the muzzle's flash. Killing has become a sacrament again, but of my own invention. And perhaps that is all religion ever was, a way to dress our violence in beauty, to pretend the abyss sings with us.